Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing well. Every day, almost.
Every day. We weren't doing well about a half an hour ago when we were trying to put everything together.
I guess I wasn't awake yet. Truth is, I've been awake for a good many hours.
I bet. Longer than me.
Maybe it's almost time to take a rest. But anyway, it's 11 o'clock Central Time, and we have a responsibility, and our responsibility is to the best of our ability to deliver some truth.
Yes.
Sort things out. And we've talked a little bit one day and a little less the next day about the Biden conference, you know, with Putin. And they've had it. No fireworks.
Yeah.
No Khrushchev pounding on the table. No missile arguments and missiles in Cuba. So, in a way, for me, it was rather calm. I thought that if you're worrying about confrontation, serious confrontation, it didn't express itself, especially when I read a paragraph, a long statement of Putin praising Biden.
Yeah.
He didn't think, because before the summit, Putin was pretty harsh with him, you know,
yeah.
Boy, how did he ever elect this guy?
Yeah.
But he had a different tone, and I don't know whether that was part of the strategy or what, because it did not look confrontational. But that doesn't mean that everybody was pleased. I think I was reassured that things weren't deteriorating and there were going to be an exchange of missiles or something like that. But I think that most people were, you know, fairly well behaved, but the frustration level on, and I'll use the first term and then explain it, the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
You know, why, if you don't have confrontation, how are we going to get these budgets passed? You know, we have to have confrontation, so we'll have to make sure that people know that the Ukraine is still a problem, and we have to do that and build up our weapons. So this is some expression here, and the Republicans had to find something, so they've complained about it too. But I guess in general, Daniel, I thought it wasn't all that bad under the circumstances. And I think, like Putin claimed that he was a little bit surprised. He thought that Biden handled himself pretty well.
Yeah.
And whether that's strategy or what he's doing there, but I'd have to say the little bit of clips, I didn't watch the whole thing, a little bit of clips, I would say he got away with no stumbling.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't stumble up the stairs or anything like that. So, but it, and I think it was worthwhile. It didn't do damage to the world, I think, if anything. And the one part, and I know you'll go into more detail, but the one part that I liked the best was they sort of put something behind them, and that was their ambassadors.
Yeah,
you know, our ambassador's going to temporarily they had to express how tough each one was. So they're back. So I would say that is progress. That's talking to people. And I don't think there was any agreements where we have made more commitments. Sometimes we go to these meetings and we accomplish a whole lot, but we have to pay for it. As long as we give them the money, then there will be, we'll buy peace for the world. It wasn't any of that, but there will be some complaints. But I think the biggest complaints will come from mostly Republicans, and they feel that's their duty, and also the people who are hawks, and there are some Democratic hawks too that would, you know, think that this was designed for confrontation. We had to show how tough we were to make sure that Biden doesn't pull anything. But Biden, I think, you know, has his goals, and I don't think he's going to back on much of anything. So all in all, I guess we could say things went fairly well.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. You know, but the problem is, and this is, Dr. Paul, this is one of the things that really make me rethink my professional focus as a foreign policy person, because, you know, this field is so crowded by know-nothings. You know, could you imagine if you sort of dabble in proctology or something? I mean, the U.S. foreign policy toward Russia is in such a mental prison that there was really not much Biden could have done if he went, you know, when he went to the meeting. It's an absolute. It's an. You know, so, but as unexciting as it was for the conclusion, I sort of felt how you did. It turned out pretty well, actually, and I'm not one to jump and praise Biden in any stretch of the imagination. But here's the results. Here's a quick rundown of the results. And this is Moon of Alabama did a good job in summarizing. As you say, return of ambassadors to their positions. They were pulled out when Biden stupidly said that that Putin was evil and he was a killer and this and that and the other. More talks on cybersecurity, and that might help smooth it over these claims that Russia keeps hacking our pipelines, what have you. Discussion potentially on prisoner exchanges. That's always positive. Be nice if Biden would, within that context, would pardon Snowden, but that's a different story. And also new talks on security, including on strategic nuclear weapons. That also could be potentially very positive. The reason why it was successful is that not much happened. And this is the problem. I mean, expectations should be very, very low. If you read the U.S. media, anything short of Biden going in there and whacking Putin over the head, numerous times would be the U.S. capitulating to the Russians. And it's so insane. But I would say if this is how you want to start opening a dialogue, this is about the right tone. And you know what tells me that it's right, Dr. Paul, is because both sides, the media, the Republicans, the Democrats, everyone are literally pulling their hair out that things went the way they did. So I think that shows that it was about the right tone.
Well, there was one episode that was minor considering international affairs, but it caught attention because there was so few fireworks going on. And that was when one of the reporters was trying to get the president to respond, which happens like crazy. Trump loved it. Yeah. The more they shouted at him, the longer he lasted, and he loved that type of thing. But there was a reporter shouting off a question as Biden was leaving, and then I guess Biden was annoyed by the approach. You could almost say, well, maybe he didn't think that was very professional the way they do that. Of course, we do it here all the time. But anyway, he was what the media decided. They had to have something. So they said that he was very, very sharp. And, you know, even if I was anxious to paint him as just losing his control, you know, I didn't think, you know, I thought it was rather mild compared to what happens at the Trump press conferences, yeah. Both with Trump and the media. And but, you know, to me, the amazing thing was it was painted that the president, they finally found, enough support that Biden overstepped his bounds. He was rude to this reporter. Reporters are never rude to a president, you know. Yeah. They were never rude to Trump. And they said that then they put the pressure, and this is the part that I didn't like on this, and that is Trump overstepped his bounds, and by golly, he better apologize.
Biden, yeah.
So he apologized. Yeah. So I would think in the whole thing, everybody's anxious, you know, the hawks. He can't appear weak. He can't appear weak. But I consider this obsession with apologies. I believe in apologizing. You know, if an apology is valuable when it's spontaneous and quick. You bump into somebody and say, I'm sorry, you know, or you knock something down, pick it up, I'm sorry I did this, and this sort of thing. But that's not what apologies are now. It's a political statement that you are obedient to the status quo, because otherwise you might get punished for this, you might get censored for this. So that was, in a scheme of things, that's pretty minor, that whole thing. But that turned out to be one moment that got reported around the world.
Caitlin Collins is her name, and she's the CNN White House correspondent. And she yelled out, "Why are you so confident that Putin will change his behavior?" And I was almost cheering for Biden because he was right. It's a stupid question. It shows the ignorance and arrogance of the media, the press in the United States. What is Biden? Is he some sort of a school marm who's going to wrap Putin over his knuckles and say, change your behavior? It's so idiotic. And Biden turned around and said, you know, what the heck are you talking about? You know, you don't even know. And then she went on. She was encouraged. She just went on. Let's put on this next clip. We can see what she said. It just shows the idiocy. And here she went on. But given his past behavior has not changed in the press conference after sitting down with you for several hours, he denied any involvement in cyber attacks. He downplayed human rights abuses. He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting, as President Putin put it. And Biden responded correctly. If you don't understand that, you're in the wrong business.
Yeah. Yes, I would say that she identified which faction of the political spectrum she's on to challenge that and make Putin look weak, or Biden look weak. So I don't know whether she accomplished that or not.
It's just this whole insane idea that the role of the United States is to run around the world telling everyone to behave themselves. You know, it's just insane. But Dr. Paul, taking the cake, Caitlin Collins couldn't have even hoped to be as dumb as the Republican Party. The RNC takes the cake for the stupidest thing I've seen in a long time. And in fact, let's cue this up. Let's take a couple of minutes and behold the absolute idiocy of the Republican Party. If we can cue up that first clip and watch it. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a joke when I saw it yesterday on Twitter.
It's morning again in Russia. Today, thousands of comrades are going back to work building Russia's future. Thanks to U.S. President Joe Biden putting Russia first, the Russian economy is being built back better. Biden's hard work removing sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline means more money for our government to do the work of the Russian people. Billions and billions of rubles to build a stronger future for Russia. Thanks to Joe Biden, it's morning again in Russia.
And this is a Republican Party whose president was a victim of this kind of ridiculous jingoism for 4 years. And now, when the tables are turned, what do? They engage in the exact same behavior.
Politicians get away with a lot. And they believe that they can fool and make jokes and the people will go along with it. And most of the time they do.
Yeah.
But there is a limit to this. And I guess this thing became, there was a limit to this and people strongly critical of Republican and Democrat stars. I mean, hey, what's going on here? You know what it reminded me of really making a mistake was do caucuses ride in the tank?
Oh, yeah.
They do this stuff all the time in campaigns especially, and they might make a mistake or bad, but they forget it the next day. But that thing, it must have been over the top when Dukakis did that.
Yeah.
And this one, I don't know whether it probably won't be anything that bad, but in a way it was in that a lot of people said, where's the balance and all? But it doesn't exist. It becomes purely political. But I think this reaching the limits has occurred with our discussion about COVID.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stupid stuff they're doing there, people finally say, I've had it, you know. So this is, I think this is representing that, but it just doesn't make any sense. You'd have to agree that Republicans probably didn't gain a lot of votes by doing that ad.
Well, the only thing that reassured me is, and I looked at the comments underneath this tweet that had the video on it, it was literally 100% negative, and it wasn't from Democrats. It was from Republicans who said, what are you talking about? President Trump was elected saying we need to get along with the Russians, and here you put this up. So literally 100%. Whoever did that should get fired immediately. From the top on down. But unfortunately, the RNC is not the only organization or person who completely lost it over the Biden meeting. Let's look at this next clip. It's a clip of our former president, if we can put that up. Trump himself, very, very dumb, as he might say. Trump on Biden-Putin meeting. It was a very good day for Russia. So now it's his chance, right? It's his chance to say, oh, I wasn't Putin's puppet. It's Biden who's Putin's puppet. And here are a couple of quotes that really underscore why, even though we're sympathetic to him because his enemies are worse than he is, why Trump was so bad as a president, particularly on foreign policy. He said, we gave a very big stage to Russia and we got nothing. I stopped the pipeline, Nord Stream 2, and the pipeline was stopped. And it was given back to Germany and Russia, and nothing was gotten for it. The idea, the arrogance, that somehow a pipeline between two other sovereign countries, thousands of miles away, somehow the U.S. has the ability to stop it or give it the okay. It's just preposterous.
He should have taken that energy and put it into the pipeline in the United States, because that deserves a little bit more debate. And why did we have a policy that so much money and time was wasted? And why should one president, one person, be able to close it down? That's all within our country. But no, we have to go thousands of miles away because it plays to the military-industrial complex. Yeah. You've got to have a confrontation. So he might be thinking, well, maybe that didn't help me in the last campaign. Maybe, you know, there were too many hawks out there. But I just don't think. I think if you argue honestly for peace and, you know, getting along with people, if it isn't like, yeah, come in and invade our country and do whatever you want, and if you have any problems, we'll buy you a hotel room or something that. That might be, but that's a different story. But just to go out and look for this, so it didn't accomplish anything at all by doing that. So I don't know how he'll handle that next go
around. Really goofy, just really disappointing.
Yeah.
But here's an example, and I clipped this. I hadn't shown this to you before, Dr. Paul, but I think you'll okay it. I hope so. I think this is an example of how you handle the media. If we could put this next clip up, I just noticed it at the last minute. And here is a German journalist asked Putin, "Are you a friend or foe to the West?" Which is a typical dumb question. Putin's response was right. "I'm not your friend. I'm not your bride or groom. I'm the president of the Russian Federation. 146 million people with national interests. And it's my job to protect those interests." And that's how you shut down the goofy media.
And that is over and done
yeah,
with.
So. Yeah. I'm not your friend or foe. But I guess we want to talk about, we gave Biden some praise. I guess we want to talk about the goofiest thing that he said. And it was so hilariously dumb and goofy that we cannot skip it. And this is that YouTube, if we can put it up. It's cued to start at the right point. I think it goes to 56 or 58 seconds. And this is what he was talking about. He said the Russians are the ones who are interfering in elections. Let's just listen to this.
"How would it be if the United States were viewed by the rest of the world as interfering with the elections directly of other countries and everybody knew it? What would it be like if we engaged in activities that he is engaged in? It diminishes the standing of a country that is desperately trying to make sure it maintains its standing as a major world power."
How would it be if the United States was viewed by the rest of the world as interfering in elections?
You know, this is a great quote.
Yeah.
At the right time and the right place, it should be made. But under these conditions, it doesn't make any sense, because he's claiming that we're a non-interventionist. When I use that principle, I was always saying, what would it be like, you know, if we were doing this to somebody else or they were doing it to us, this would be different. And this is what he's saying. Like we've never done it. How many... You know, we probably have been, I bet we've interfered in 100 elections over the last, since World War II. And just recently, I think we were sort of involved in Syria and Ukraine and a few other places all over the Middle East. I mean, we don't just interfere in the election, we own the country when we go in and put our troops in there.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't even let go of Afghanistan. We just have to keep troops. We have to keep the troops in Syria and all this. And ultimately, we're very much involved. So that is the silliest dumb thing, and yet the principle is important to emphasize about being careful. You know, what we do to others, if they do it to us, we might complain about it. That is supposed to put restraint on us and admit that we already do that and we're involved way too much. I mean, we have troops in 100 to some degree, 120, 140 countries, and it's always changing. And I think our CIA is involved just in about all the elections that go on one way or another.
I mean, literally, when Biden was vice president, the administration overthrew the Honduran government, just out and out overthrew it. That was Hillary's thing. Under Trump, we basically told the Venezuelans, "No, you elected the wrong guy. We're going to name your president for you." Bolivia, as you say, Syria, Ukraine, and so on and so on. If the rest of the world isn't laughing at that clip, they must be sound asleep.
No,
you
know? that's for sure.
Well, I just want to move on just to a couple of little miscellaneous things. And the next one we saw, this is from Paul Joseph Watson, who, let's look at the next clip, actually. It's pretty interesting. It's about the plexiglass. There's a new report that came out in the UK. They actually showed that these plexiglass screens, and we see them everywhere, Dr. Paul, every single store you go to, not only did they not stop the spread of COVID, they actually increased the spread of COVID. This is another example, I'm sure, of a company or an industry making millions, if not billions of dollars on this fear, this ill-gotten fear, making huge profits, selling a product like the face mask that is does not operate as advertised.
You know, in medicine, the famous quote, first, do no harm.
Yeah.
And a lot of doctors never learned that. But I don't think it's just the doctors, it's a system, you know, because government got taken over, medicine has gotten over, taken over the government, and therefore it became an effort by the drug companies to take over the control, and the pharmaceuticals have. And when governments do things and make regulations or give drugs or the wrong processes and they cause disease, it's unintended consequences, but it's also a disease they call iatrogenic, yeah. You know, caused by the doctors themselves. And I would say that is has not been totaled yet. It's going to be totaled, and there are people now who are claiming, and only time will tell, that more disease and more people died, you know, from the treatment, the lockdown, than they did from the medication. Because just look, it was the denial of medication, yeah, which was a real problem. And just look at what happened at the nursing homes. I mean, nobody's ever totaled that up. And what about the numbers that are actually increasing, you know, from the vaccine?
Yeah.
And people are dying from that. And you mentioned the other day about the young girl that they even went to having a heart transplant and couldn't save her life. So it's not that this stuff is made up. It's not fake news.
Yeah.
The fake news is the denial. You know, oh, there's no problem. It's, you know, in a context of things, the expense isn't that bad. 100 people didn't die, only 10 people died.
Yeah.
You know, this sort of thing. So that is a real shame. And this is what this is doing, this complication from this plexiglass, that it wasn't helpful. But I think many have come to the conclusion that the mask itself didn't help, and that social distancing probably didn't save any lives. I think common sense at times in the past have always helped, you know, diminish spreading of diseases. But when the government gets involved, this is a radical statement. They screw it up.
Yeah.
The government's a bunch of bureaucrats who are there for the wrong reason and not because they're quality people. And of course, what's happened at the CDC and other places is really scary. But a typical example should wake people up and say enough is enough. People should say throw off your chains, like,
yeah,
those kids threw off their masks in Israel. You know, that was their chain, and they were like, I'm free, I'm free.
Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
A great clip. Well, I'm going to just finish up. Oh, no, we have one more thing to do. I'm sorry. Our great conservative Supreme Court you wanted to mention.
Yes. Well, we were reassured, and as things were going on, and when the debate was going on appointing Republican judges to the Supreme Court, maybe really some good's going to come of that.
Yeah.
So certainly it wouldn't take a genius in constitutional law to figure out that a total control of health care by Obamacare does not fit into the Constitution. Absolutely no authority for this.
Yeah.
But it was a bigger job than that, because already the government had been involved in medical care, so therefore you can't pick and choose. So they finally get it to the Supreme Court, and they had a ruling. It was, 7-2. It's perfectly legal, no constitutional problem. The states can't object, and you will follow the rules. So this to me is just typical. And also, this whole idea that there is a Republican conservative constitutional position versus a liberal democratic position. It's a bipartisan position that usually comes together due to the powerful lobbying group and the money behind things, whether it's drug companies or the military or whatever. And maybe they have a few people behind designing all this, and that's called the deep state.
Yeah.
And they decide, what are we going to save now? And then the power is in the dissemination of information. And that's why I take very seriously in our efforts to try to sort it out and understand what's going on and try to let the people know what the real truth is.
Yes, well, I'm going to close with something because this is a kind of a good news story that we talk about, and that's when parents start taking charge. We saw it in Loudoun County and Fairfax County when they start fighting back for their kids. And this is an article that's up on Ron Paul Institute website, ronpaulinstitute.org. What happened is that six Alachua County, Florida parents took the masks that their kids were wearing, forced to wear at school, the face masks. And these were not used. These were freshly laundered masks. They sent it to the University of Florida's Mass Spectrometry Research and Education Center to be analyzed. Kids' masks are forced to wear at school. And the resulting report from the university from examining these masks showed that five of the masks were contaminated with bacteria, parasites, and fungi, including three with dangerous, pathogenic, and pneumonia-causing bacteria. And the lab, in the article we have up there, the lab will show you all these things. I can't pronounce them, Dr. Paul. I'm not a doctor, but they look really bad. Tuberculosis, sepsis, meningitis. I mean, and these are not dirty masks. These are the clean masks. So there's something for you there, and look at it. And I do want to say one final thing is that I was pretty shocked. Maybe you weren't shocked, but we did put tickets on sale last night for the conference we're holding in Houston, a small conference on Nixon's closing of the gold window. Within 12 hours, Dr. Paul, every ticket was sold. The demand was huge, and we're glad, we're thankful. Right now, we're scrambling to try to make a few more seats available. We want to be able to do it in a way that keeps the integrity of the event that we're holding. So hopefully we'll be able to free up a few more seats. But I'm just thrilled that everyone wants to come out. I guess everyone's just happy to come out again.
Yeah, that's good. And you know, this is an event that I thought was very important. I didn't intend it to be a big rally or a fundraiser or this sort of thing, but something that we could get some people around, seriously discuss, you know, August 15th, 1971, because it was a major political event for me on that day because I remember it precisely and it motivated me to decide I wanted to speak out about the monetary system in this country and in the world because an event occurred there. It was the last final nail in the coffin of any relationship to the reserve currency of the world, the dollar, to gold. And my thoughts were, this is going to lead to big trouble. Of course, the decade of the 70s led to big trouble, but they have continued. And the mess that we have today, the modern monetary theory is all related to this. And the really climactic end of this is going to come in the future. And exactly how that will evolve, we don't know. But to me, it was a very, very significant day. And it's something that is ongoing. So I thought that this would be interesting to get some people together, and evidently I was suspicious that there's a lot of people out there that know about and understand it. Of course, anybody that heard me give a talk, it's hard for me to get by a significant talk without mentioning my early days in politics, because I never had a goal. I'm going to Congress. How do you run for Congress? I want to do this. But I did have a goal of looking for a platform to talk about something that I had been studying over the year, and believe that the Austrian economists came up with the correct answers about how the business cycle operates. And that has motivated me. The political activity that I've had, I won't use the word success, somebody else will have to decide whether it's said, but the activity was a result of my interest in monetary policy. So that's one of the reasons why we're having this, to get some people together and enjoy it, enjoy a conference where people know and understand exactly what's going on in the monetary system. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.